All right, here's what you need to know about on this day. If Jeffrey Epstein's death is somehow related to the attack in Iran, then you definitely need to know about these two new details regarding this. One is how he died. Some really interesting new information on that. And the other is about President Trump, and it's kind of ugly. Gas prices are going up in places like the United States and India, and now we're seeing long lines. Seeing them, and I'm going to show them to you. Also, two questions. Why are Iran's missiles hitting their targets so effectively? And why are the U.S.'s defense systems doing the opposite? Scott Ritter is going to be here to talk to me and try and explain this to us, because he's got a beat on it. This is The Sanchez Effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thank you so much for being with us. And yeah, there is a bit of a blockbuster that we want to start with today. And this is a story that's being reported by none other than Julie Brown. Julie Brown, I know. She works for the Miami Herald, a good newspaper. Like, here's what you need to know about Julie Brown. Julie Brown was the person who broke the Epstein story. You would never have heard of Jeffrey Epstein. I would never have heard of Jeffrey Epstein. No one would have heard of Jeffrey Epstein had it not been for Julie Brown. One reporter making phone calls, asking good questions at the Miami Herald, my hometown newspaper. So if she's reporting something, that usually means it's credible. This time, her story seems to support the case that Epstein was actually killed by the guards that were assigned to watch him. Here's the headline. Take a look at this. See this? Prison guards discussed the cover-up of Epstein's death, inmate tells FBI. Miami Herald. So apparently there was an inmate that was in the cell, right, next to where Epstein was, and he woke up like at 6:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden there was a lot of commotion and noise, he says. And then he heard, breathe, breathe. So he recalled officers that were shouting about that time. And then he heard an officer say, dudes, you just killed that dude. That's what's being reported. A female guard in there, I guess with Epstein, suddenly was heard saying, if he's dead, we have to cover this up. And we need to have an alibi. Our officers, referring to the other guards, I guess, that were there with her. Now, according to hidden FBI report up to now, which has now been released, the inmate says this whole thing was overheard by the entire wing. In other words, all the prisoners who were on the wing then later on were talking about this and were saying to each other, Miss Noel killed Jeffrey. Miss Noel killed Jeffrey. Well, who's Miss Noel? Well, they've identified this female guard as Tova Noel, the woman guard who was watching Epstein at the time. And apparently the phone records now show what she was Googling before Epstein died, before they even went into his cell, right? 40 minutes before Epstein died, she was Googling about Epstein's condition. Why would she do that? They also found out that she had deposited $5,000 into her bank account about 5-6 days after Epstein died as well. This is a story that's making headlines today in the United States, and this one as well, having to do with Mr. Trump. Look at this. The FBI apparently did 4 interviews with the woman who has described how Mr. Trump sexually abused her when she was 13 years old. Now, a lot of people can make allegations. A lot of people can say a lot of things, right? So what makes this important? Well, as you probably know, in the interviews, this is all out there now, she alleges what Mr. Trump did to her. And it's kind of specific and kind of gross, you know, for what it's worth. Especially gross for those of us who have daughters or wives or just respect people, I guess. But what makes this story today more salient, more noteworthy, more credible? It's the fact that they interviewed her 4 times. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute. I've worked with police officers. I've been a police officer, cop beat reporter for years. That's how I started in this business. When police officers get a call and somebody says they have something important to tell them, they may go talk to them one time and then they usually go, crazy, or nah, it doesn't work, whatever, right? Sometimes they'll talk to her a second time, maybe take down a statement. But the fact that the FBI, we now learn, went and talked to this woman, not once, not twice, not three times, but four different times to take different statements from her. That's what makes this this story on this day so important. Speaking of stories in America, watch this. This is crazy. Apparently, this video reveals what, according to police, are two guys. There they are right there. That's the two of them you just saw right there. They tried to place what appears to be a bomb. Not appears to be. We now know it's been confirmed. It's an explosive device. There it is right there in front of the home of the mayor of New York, one of the most important politicians in all of the United States, Zohram Mamdani. The scene is crazy when you look at this. The men are running in different direction. The guy gives the bomb or the explosive device to one guy, then he gives it to the other guy, then he throws it in front of the men. It looks kind of like it's all discombobulated, right? Now, these men were part of a protest that were taking place in front of the mayor's house. It's called Gracie Mansion. There were two protests, really. One was against Muslims, because the mayor is kind of pro-Muslim. The other one was by other people who were protesting the protest. These men are identified as Emir Balat and Ibrahim Kayumi. They were part of the second protest. Now, the motive is still unknown. Here's what else we need to know, because now we start moving into the conversation about the war in Iran. The war in Iran is having an effect on the people of the United States, and it's not the effect that the president of the United States wanted. He was thinking people were going to be celebrating this. Yay, Mr. President, you're so tough. You're going to take care of those big, bad Iranians. No. People in America are angry. And you know what? One of the things that they're angry about, besides the war, which they tend to by far be against, look at this message that was put out by a very respected U.S. congressman, one of the only respected U.S. congressmen. His name is Thomas Massie, and he writes, the price of gas has gone up 47 cents, and the price of diesel has gone up 83 cents in just 10 days due to the war. And waging this war is costing American taxpayers about $1 billion a day. So what's the effect on Americans? Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to take you now to the gas station where I fill up my car whenever it starts to look like it's empty. This is about a couple of blocks from our house. This is not in Miami. It's in Fort Lauderdale, where my wife and my kids are. Take a look at this report from there.
Typically, when you come to these big wholesale stores like Costco here in Davie, there's going to be always a bit of traffic, folks trying to get in. But look at this live picture right now. You can see plenty of cars here. We talked to a worker here. She says she hasn't seen it like this in a long time. Here in Davie, from Chopper 6, you can see the long lines. The traffic in and out of this Costco is nonstop.
And, you know, I looked around this morning because I wanted to see, well, where else is this going on? It's not everywhere, but there's enough that people are talking about it. I know when I talk to my friends in the United States, that's what they're saying. My wife told me the other day, I got to get up early to get gas. I was like, wow, this again. But it's not just the United States. I want to show you some video now that we got from India. Look at this. This is India. People lining up to get their LNG. Yeah, so they get their, you know, liquefied natural gas, their gas that they put in their, that they use to cook, to refill all of their cooking containers, which is quite popular in India. And everybody has to line up now, but they think there isn't going to be enough. So there's a mad dash, and people are waiting in these lines. Now, to be fair, some of this isn't because there's a shortage. It's because people are simply freaked out about this, and they're worried that there will be a shortage. So that's what's going on in the United States. That's what's going on in India, and who knows in how many other different places. So then we got to ask ourselves, you know, why is this happening, right? Why is this happening right now? Well, it's because Israel and the United States may have underestimated the size of the hornet's nest that it disrupted. You see, all Muslims across the Middle East are somewhat furious about this, especially the Shias, right? And then there's this. Even corporate media now, because I've seen the reports myself, are starting to admit how surprisingly effective Iran's missiles have been. In fact, I wanted to show you this. We could have gone on forever with this, but I just want to give you a sampling. Our editors put together like a montage of all the direct hits on all the different facilities that we've just seen in the last couple of days. Here, take a look at this. By the way, Israel does not want you to know this, but we've seen the pictures that are getting out because they're pretty much trying to block out any video coming out of places like Tel Aviv. But there are, I've seen devastation in Tel Aviv. I've seen video after video and picture after picture of scenes in Tel Aviv that look like they have been very seriously damaged. Exactly what the count is, we don't know at this point, and we're not going to dare guess. So why are all these missiles getting through? Well, Iran's drone technology is a big part of this. They didn't use this in the past, but they're hitting it now. The Wall Street Journal, as you can see there, is reporting that they're using satellites and knocking out the satellite systems that are used by the United States. See those satellite systems that you see in that article right there? They basically tell the interceptors where the missiles are. But if you knock out the satellites, the interceptors don't know what to do. That's why you've seen all these pictures of missiles coming in, and you see the interceptors trying to hit the missile, and they go like this and like this. You know, and those of us who don't know anything about this kind of thing are going, wait a minute, I don't think that's the way that's supposed to work, right? But that's what we're seeing. And I think that's the reason for it. So they've got these advanced satellite systems that they got from China. They've got drone know-how and technology from Russia, intelligence from both to tell them where the U.S. and the Israeli stuff is so they know where to hit. In fact, listen to Scott Ritter, right? He's going to be joining us a little bit later in the show, but he's as smart as anybody when it comes to this kind of stuff. Look how he explains this one latest example of how intel was used against the Israelis in this case. Take a listen to it.
It appears that the Iranians struck a building, and that building contained Israeli officers who were carrying out a conference about this war. The location of that building had been selected by the Israelis in the morning, meaning that by striking this building and killing the people inside, Iran not only proved that they had the capability to penetrate Israeli air defense at any time, this building was selected because it was supposed to be ringed by sufficient air defense systems, but Iran also showed that they have the ability to collect intelligence information, highly accurate intelligence information about the most sensitive topics in Israel, and respond in a timely fashion, killing the Israelis involved. This, more than anything, scares the Israelis because they now know they are all literally dead men walking.
So the Iranians, he said, have intel they've never had before, and they're able to evade the defense systems. Those are the two most important things in a situation like this. But you know, like an ostrich that wants to hide its head in the ground to avoid reality, I'm hearing these U.S. neocons telling themselves and probably whispering to Mr. Trump, boss, don't worry about all that. That's not true. Don't listen to Scott Ritter. Don't listen to Doug McGregor. Don't listen to any of these people. Don't listen. No. Just go on CNN and tell them what we know is true. This is total devastation. None of Iran's missiles are getting through. And if one gets through from time to time, it's just very few, very few. Yeah, that's what they're saying. I watch them. In fact, I was just invited to a show over the weekend. I don't know if you guys saw this. I've been invited lately to be a guest on a lot of shows, and I was invited on TRT, which is a fabulous network, right? It's a television network from Turkey. Watch what the other guests, both our U.S. ambassadors, said while I was on the air talking with them. And I had just said we should be concerned about the effectiveness of Iran's missiles. And he comes back with this.
What seems to be happening in this case and across the board, with very few Iranian missiles hitting the mark, is that there has been a devolution of command authority within the Iranian military. This has been reported upon rather extensively. And frankly, the regime seems to be in utter disarray.
Mm-hmm. Did you say very few Iranian missiles are hitting their mark? Did I just hear you say that?
I like when they say, well, this has been reported about quite extensively. What the hell does that even mean? This guy's actually sitting there with a straight face saying, oh, yeah, the United States is destroying all of Iran, and, you know, very few of their missiles are even getting through. Then what are we looking at? This is why, for good measure, pardon me, I'm not usually a mean guy, but I decided to be mean here. And I kind of gave him a little parting shot of truth at the end of the interview. Here, watch what I said to him.
And it's great to be able to once again be on with two neocon guests who get their news from NBC and CNN and share the perspective that everything everybody in the world does is bad except the United States, who's glorious, wonderful, and everything they do is great.
I'm sorry. I mean, some things just have to be said. By the way, they were furious. Furious! Never be invited back to talk to this guy. Never have ever. They're so mad at me. But you know what? Sometimes you just have to say things as they are, right? I appreciate the fact that TRT had me on to give, if nothing else, a little bit of a different perspective. And by the way, I'm thinking here now, of all the countries that should be vigilant, it's Turkey, speaking of TRT, because it's next on Israel's sights of countries that Israel wants the United States to attack. Because Israel doesn't attack. They just call Washington and say, hey, hit these guys. Hit Iraq. Hit Syria. Hit Libya. Hit Iran. The next one is hit Turkey. That's not me. It's not Rick Sanchez saying that, by the way. So don't take my word for this. Listen to Israel's former prime minister.
Turkish threat is emerging. I want to be very clear. Turkey and Qatar have gained influence in Syria, are seeking influence elsewhere and everywhere throughout the region. And from here, I warn, Turkey is the new Iran.
And now this, just before going on the air, we learned that, believe it or not, we hadn't even planned for this, because I had prepared some of this material a couple hours ago. And now, just before going on the air, we hear that the United States is evacuating some staff at their embassy in Istanbul. Let's do this. We've got a correspondent I think we can go to. If he's ready to go, Yasim Ekin is joining us now, RT correspondent, reporting from Istanbul. What are you hearing? Is that true, what I just reported or said we think is happening? Am I right?
You are right, Rick, and it's not necessarily coincidence. And I don't want to speculate, because when the embassy in Ankara issued the order to push all non-essential personnel and families outside of the consulate in Adana, which is in the southeast of the country, right by the border with Syria. Naturally, everyone had thoughts in their head. But one thing that is interesting is an hour after that order was issued, naturally, we heard from the Ministry of National Defense. We heard from the Director of Communications, and they stated that they intercepted another projectile. So things do seem to be tense on the border, but depending on who you ask, they might tell a different story.
Projectile from whom? I mean, are these who's shooting? If someone's shooting a turkey, we need to know who's shooting a turkey, right?
Naturally. Now, this is the second such case. The first time it happened, there was a little bit of ambiguity. But the second time around, which is about an hour or two before we went live, the Ministry of National Defense issued a statement. They said that the projectile, the ballistic missile, was launched from Iran. So what this tells us is that Ankara is in a position where it is monitoring everything, and it was able to monitor that projectile, that missile, from Iran, and they intercepted it. Naturally, NATO assets within the East Mediterranean intercepted that projectile before it made its way into Turkish airspace. But, I mean, forgive me here, but what comes next is definitely the next question. Is Turkey being dragged into this conflict?
Exactly. And
it depends on who you ask. It depends on who you ask, right? The Turkish Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan on Saturday held an informal meeting with the Organization of Turkic States, met with the foreign ministers of several countries all across the board. The topic was Iran. And in that press conference, he said one thing that was quite clear as day. He said, look, if it's a one-off thing, we're willing to look past it. But if it happens again, then we're going to treat this as a more serious matter and we are going to retaliate. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that Turkey is going to engage and be provoked and dragged into the war. Ankara has been very clear that Turkey is not going to enter this war. Turkey is not going to fight against Iran. And most importantly, Turkey is not going to be used as a tool.
Well, here's what we need to understand. Let's set the table. Iran has said, the foreign minister told me this himself, Aracha, if they hit us, we will hit them from where they hit us. And if they have bases in this part of the world, we are going to hit those bases. So, as we know, Iran has hit, and quite effectively, Oman and UAE and Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait. If the United States has military installations in Turkey and is in any way using those bases to attack Iran, then Iran would say that is fair game. And they would probably counter with, and I'm not putting words in their mouth, but you can help me here, we're not attacking you, Turkey. We're attacking the installations that the United States has in your country. Is that what we're really talking about?
In theory, yes. But as to how this plays out is, I think, a bigger concern. In theory, yes, of course. So Iran could definitely say that you have the United States operating. And this is, I think, an important caveat that we need to differentiate and highlight. The United States does not possess a base of its own within Turkish borders. It is a Turkish base that is a joint operation with NATO. And the United States, along with a number of other nations, from France to Spain, there are a number of different military personnel that are currently being kept in that space. But, of course, this is a war of words, right? So, like you said, Iran could very well say, well, you know, the United States, the aggressor, is definitely using this base to carry out its operations. Huh. And if they do, that's another hypothetical. But if that happens, then, again, the bigger question is, well, what comes next?
Yeah.
Now, I think the issue with Iran was, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the issue with Iran was the United States, to a large degree, did underestimate them.
Yeah.
And the reason why we always talk about military power, right? We say the United States has the technological advancements, they have the resources, which is the case. And in contrast, Iran doesn't have that. But then it begs the question, well, how is Iran in a position to win, hypothetically speaking? And as time goes on, that reality becomes much more consistent. And I think the same could be said about Turkey. So Iran could hypothetically attack the Turkish bases that host the NATO and U.S. Troops. But I think it's a lot easier said than done. And I don't necessarily think Iran is in a position where it wants to do that, right?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Why would you want to conflagrate things? Why? I mean, if you got three people you're hitting and some of them are hitting back, why would you want to add to your enemies list in a situation like this? That's why the caveats and the nuance here is so important. So I'll leave you with this question, I guess, because our viewers are probably wondering. Do you believe Turkey would feel like, hey, they're hitting us, we are going to have to soon come up with a way to hit back? Or are they looking at this as more complex and they can probably figure it out on the phone by having the foreign ministers or maybe even at a higher level talk to each other?
I think you put it clearly, and it's possible it could be one of two ways, if not both, actually. The diplomacy definitely will be a channel that will be available, no matter the conflict. But I also think that if push comes to shove, Turkey is in a position with, and the Turkish foreign minister, the president, have said time and time again, essentially, don't test our resolve.
Yeah.
Turkey is not a pushover. And Turkey and Iran, they share a lot, if you think about it. You know, Iran has faced sanctions over the years. It's had adverse effects on its economy and its capability to build its military infrastructure. Turkey, to a similar degree, has that as well. But there is a level of self-sufficiency that the Turkish state has been successful in producing its own capabilities and its reliance on its own indigenous infrastructure.
Yeah.
But There's that aspect, and you've been around the region, Rick. You probably understand this better than most. The people in the region, in the broader Middle East and parts of Asia, they have an interesting resolve, especially when they feel like they are being attacked.
Yes.
So, very briefly, I want to talk to you about what the Turkish response has been. Yes, I said that, you know, the Turkish foreign minister made statements, the president did, the defense minister, but The people. Going through social media this past week, a lot of Turkish accounts have actually been sharing videos on how to use an F-16, how to essentially take off, lock on your missiles and land, tanks, helicopters. The list goes on. So to a degree, I feel like the Turkish people are kind of in a state where, well, if this fight's going to come to us, we're not going to be provoked, we're not going to be tricked, but if push comes to shove, bring it on, is essentially, I think, the mindset for all the Turkish people.
No, listen, Yasin, what you're talking about is in many ways similar to the conversations I've had with officials in Pakistan and Qatar and in other places. That it's a mindset, it's a sense of will, and there is a fear that is permeating the region right now. And that's why these things can spiral, which is the biggest fear of all. Good reporting, man. You're really good at explaining things. You made it so clear to me and to our audience. We really thank you for that.
It's my pleasure.
Yasin Akin, reporting from Istanbul about the situation in Ankara. My favorite part of the show is coming up. I'm going to have an opportunity to talk to Scott Ritter. Scott, as you know, is a former U.S. weapons inspector. He is a Marine. He's also just a tough guy who's a really good man who happens to believe in truth. And, you know, we're going to be hopefully talking about some of these truths when we come back right here. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is The Sanchez Effect. Hey, by the way, we just hit 100,000 followers on YouTube. And guess what? Within the last couple of days, we hit 110. So we're growing so fast. Thank you so much for letting us into our homes, into your homes. We'll be right back with Scott. Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being here. Let's talk to Scott Ritter. As you probably know, he's a former U.S. weapons inspector. He was the guy who had the intestinal fortitude to say before the Iraq War, this is bullcrap and they have no weapons of mass destruction. Not enough people listened to him, but he was a lone, brave voice at the time. He continues to be that lone, brave voice, talking this time about the situation in Iran. Scott, always great to see you, my dear friend.
Thank you very much for having me. Good to see you.
Let's start with the process. We're going to get into you trying to explain to me what the hell is going on with these interceptors that don't seem to be working, which we were told were so fantastic and incredible. But before we get to that, I'd just like to get your sense as an American about what our government is doing in terms of how they explain what the decision was to go to war. They're changing explanations about not just that, but what's actually happening on the ground. And the relationship evolving with Israel throughout this. So let's just start there. What do you make so far of the handling of the war by the Trump administration?
Well, it's been the most grotesque mismanagement imaginable. First of all, let's start off with the notion that the United States is a constitutional republic founded on the basis of the rule of law. That is an absolute, both in terms of domestic application and through international law. We have always claimed that this was our core value. We haven't always operated with that, but at least there was the pretense that we were a nation that adhered or sought to adhere to the rule of law. This war is an illegal war of aggression with no foundation in any legal authority, domestic or international. This is the ultimate war crime that's been